welcome everybody to iloverealestate.tv. Great to have you guys on board again and hope you've had a fabulous week. Now today I'm going to talk about a topic that most people run into at some point in time. And whether it be on your own home or whether it be on an investment property or whether it be your very first deal that you get out there and do, at some point in time, you're going to be faced with some dilemmas around renovation. Now, renovation can be a strategy that is a chunk deal. Now, what I call a chunk deal is when you do a deal and you do something to that deal and you make money out of it. Now, that can be your PPR or it can be an investment property. So a chunk deal is the concept of making a chunk of money out of doing something. So renovation really comes in as a chunk deal, and it's a great way to get in there and maybe even start off in real estate and maybe even start off in real estate on your very first deal. It's a strategy that even if you absolutely hate renovating, you don't like designing, you don't like interior decorating, you don't know which end of a hammer to use or a paintbrush, it doesn't matter, because renovation is something that if you're handy, you kind of think, oh, I've got to do it myself. Well, I've got a few suggestions on that, and that's not always the way to go. Or you're on the other side of the scale where it's like, absolutely no way. There is no way I'm doing a renovation. I just want new or something that I don't have to do anything to. Well, I think there's a middle ground there, which is very, very lucrative. And that's what we're all about. We're about making money and profits in real estate. So I want to talk about renovations because even if you're your strategy for making money in real estate is new construction, great. But at some point in time, you're going to run across a situation where you're going to have to do some form of renovation. So that's why I want to talk about it. I think it's a very important strategy. I think it's a strategy that everybody will have to do at some point in time. And there's a lot of techniques that you can utilize to fast track things. There's a lot of techniques you can use to cut down your costs, and there's a lot of techniques that you can use to really make more money. You know, a lot of people think renovation is the easiest strategy to do in real estate. I wouldn't say it's the easiest. In fact, I think it's one of the more difficult ones. But it's actually normally the strategy that most people start with. It's a strategy that they think they have to start with. And if you're already in real estate, but the only real estate you have is your own home and it's an older home, it is probably where you're going to start. So let's talk a little bit more about some of the strategies and some of the techniques that you can use to fast track things and make more money. Now, the gentleman I'm going to have on this evening or today or whenever you'll happen to be listening to the podcast, he's a gentleman you all know. He's somebody that I've had on before, and I know I've received a lot of emails and cards and support of some of the great learnings that have come out of our chats. And that is Mr. Ian Ugarte. Are you there, Ian?
Yes, I am here, and I am a gentleman.
You're a gentleman, are you? Is it very often that you get described as a gentleman?
I'm more like a gentle boy usually, but it's a size thing.
Okay, Ian. Now, renovation is something you've got a fair degree of experience in. And for those who are just listening to you for the first time, let's backtrack a little bit and talk a little bit about your earlier history. And, you know, you've come from a trade background. What trade was that?
I'm a plumber by trade. I grew up in a family of plumbers. Dad's a plumber, brother's a plumber, sister, mum, everyone's a plumber. So that's my trade, and that's where I started to pick up about building and renovation.
And you quickly saw that probably wasn't going to be your life's desire to work on the tools all your life. You got offered an opportunity to go and work for TAFE and to teach other plumbers?
Yeah, I was lucky. I was fortunate enough that I had a reasonable skill base, and I started in a competition which eventually led to me going to teaching. And I started very, very early. I think I was 23 when I started teaching. And so from there I worked my way up to head teacher in plumbing, and that was great. You know, you got to be with kids and teach them and produce more out of them as we were going along. and then got into management of TAFE New South Wales. So from that, here I am.
And you had a pretty solid rise to fame in the TAFE industry in New South Wales, and you got up to a head something or other?
I was what they call an intermediate manager, but essentially I was an assistant college director. Okay. So one more step up, I would have been a college director.
That sounds pretty cool, huh?
Yeah. Well, you get your own car spot.
Very good. Yes. And then, of course, along came me and the training and everything else, and you chucked it all in.
Yeah.
I don't give you a car spot at all.
I don't need a car spot. But, yeah, it was a reverse of pear shape, I suppose, once I met Dipner. And, I became a student and quite happily am now in a position where I'm a full-time investor.
Give us the figures. How much your passive income?
We're well in excess of $200,000 now, and aiming at
that is per annum.
Per annum, and yes.
That comes in passively, and you don't have to worry about a car spot to get it.
That's right. Can sit at home and watch Oprah do that. We're aiming towards $500,000 in a year or two's time. So.
Okay. Certainly got some creds behind you. Now, one of the things that you've done quite a bit of, and obviously with your trade background, you've got some technical experience in the thing as well, is the renovation game. And that's what we're going to talk about today, Ian. So thanks for coming back on and being one of my regulars on the show. Now, renovation. Let's start with where most people start, which is renovating your own home. And one of the biggest mistakes that I find people make is that they renovate to suit their own emotional needs rather than their hip pocket. Now, that's okay if it's your home and you want to live there forever and ever, but if you are considering your principal place of residence or the place where you live as a stepping stone to something else and a primary part of your wealth creation strategies, then you have to look at things a little bit differently than, what I really want, casement timber windows that you have to paint every 6 months in Queensland like I did when I first started.
Yes.
Who in their right mind does that?
So, you're right there. Making sure that you're spending the right amount of money to get the right outcome is really important in renovation, and that doesn't matter whether it's your own home or further in your investment property. But generally, once you've met Dimpno, it's likely that you're going to renovate your house to try and get more money out of it rather than doing it for comfort. And so that being the case, you need to appeal to a valuer usually. And a valuer isn't really going to notice the fine details or the $3,000 tapware that you've put in. Mm. They're going to look from afar with a checklist and make sure that everything is in the house, that it's quite comfortable and clean and that there's no cracks anywhere. And so just covering those cracks up, being neutral in your choices of colour is pretty important, and tidying things up. And that's really going to be your start of renovation.
So let's have a look at some of those things that, a valuer would look at, and things that will add a lot of end value to your property, regardless of whether you're selling it or whether you're refinancing to use that equity to go and start your investing career. Because it's as you said, it's not the $3,000 tap that you put in. It's going to be some very fundamental things. So let's have a bit of a think tank on what they are and discuss those things. One of the things that I'd like to start with is the number of bedrooms. Because something that is, quite overlooked in the renovating game and the wealth creation chunk deal game is adding another bedroom or getting another livable space out of the spaces that you already have. Because particularly in the built-up areas like anywhere, but you see it more pronounced, I suppose, in the built-up areas like your major capital cities, where a two-bedroom house sells in a range of, $50,000. So from the bottom price of a two-bedroom house to the top price of a two-bedroom house, you're going to have maybe $50,000 spread at the very, very most. Three-bedroom house, same thing. Four-bedroom house, the same thing. So, but the jump between a two-bedroom house to a three-bedroom house might be another $50,000, $60,000, $100,000 in some instances. And that spread really needs to be taken into account. So simply trying to convert or a small extension or a conversion from a useless space by reconfiguring for design it to create an extra bedroom, I find adds tens of thousands of dollars to your end product.
Yeah, that's right. And so, I mean, generally some of the older places have two living areas, and nowadays we all want open plan with the dining, kitchen and lounge all together in one hit. So that usually that lounge room is quite easily converted. You can probably get a carpenter.
Or dining room.
Or dining room.
Oh, quite. Dining rooms. Who uses a dining room these days?
Yeah, well, I don't know how to use cutlery, let alone do a dine. So, you know, then you've got your attached brick. When you've got an attached brick garage, that's another area that can be converted quite easily. So and like you said, it's going to add more value wherever you can put that extra space in. Small extensions are good too. There are some states that will allow you to do a small extension by using private certifiers, and that's important to have those.
Just explain what a private certifier is.
Okay, so private certifier, in the past we had, you'd go to council and you'd apply for a development application or similar. The council would approve it, and then the council would come up and inspect your property at different levels or different stages. They then went to private certifiers to do the inspections, but the council still needed to take on the application process. So those private certifiers were building people that could inspect on behalf of council, and then they'd notify council that it was acceptable. We're now getting to the stage where those private certifiers are now in at least two states able to sign off on minor construction applications instead of the council doing it, and then that file is sent to council so the council has a record. So it's a very important movement, and as we know, once one or two states does it, then it's likely, and it's successful, it's likely that the rest of the states will carry on as well.
And they have been very, very successful. I know private certifiers have been in Queensland for a long time. New South Wales has probably came on second but then jumped to the lead and is now, I would consider, the best state in Australia for doing a lot of, you know, renovations and add-ons of extra dwellings and things like that. They're far in advance of the rest of the country.
Yeah, essentially the state government was said to local councils, either you're going to have to find a way of making policy changes so it's easier for people to do things, or else we're going to impose that on top of you. So what they did was they went out and created, in New South Wales, they created the exempt development laws and the complying development laws. Now, under exempt development in New South Wales, you can do a large amount of things that don't need approval. So you can add 25 square metres of decking, depending, making sure that you're not too high off the ground. There's, you know, you can paint, you can change windows, you can do some internal alterations, lots of things like that. And then going into complying development, you can actually do extensions. Under complying development, you can actually get a new house approved within 10 days rather than going through a whole three-month process with the council. It's quite an amazing thing, and I'm hoping that the rest of the country takes on after it.
I actually feel it will. I think you're seeing just, you know, Queensland's certainly coming on board. WA might be a little bit slow in the uptake because they're still very state-based, but they're still reasonably placed for that sort of thing. Victoria is, they're actually looking very seriously at what's going on in Queensland and New South Wales, and I think you'll start to see some improvements down there very shortly, particularly as the market starts to slow up a little bit. They're looking for other ways to get some activity in the market. And South Australia is probably in the middle between Western Australia and Victoria, literally, on this one. And they'll follow suit when WA does. Tassie, don't have a huge amount of experience down in Tassie from this level, but it's a state that typically follows Victoria. So when Victoria moves, so too will Tassie. So I think you've got Queensland jumped the gun to start with, but they've been overtaken by New South Wales, and the rest of the states are really kind of catching up now.
And that's the potential you have on when you do renovate your home to get more value out of it. Go to your local authority, your local council, and see what is allowable without having to make application. So if you can put a deck on, if you can put a cabana in the backyard, do those sort of things that are allowable without having to do the application, because that's going to slow you down. And again, once you meet Dimpner, it's all about getting paced and getting quick and making sure you get your money out there to do things that work for you.
You make me sound like this woman with a whip or something.
And what
everyone
was your point? And your point?
Scared of me. Maybe so. Okay. Let's go back to the bedroom, shall we? Talking about adding bedrooms.
Yeah, sorry.
converting unusable or underutilized space into, you know, what is considered more valuable. And bedrooms is definitely one. As we said, dining rooms, garages, those sorts of things, small extensions. Something that I've always found particularly interesting is adding very small en suites, particularly when, you know, the go back probably 10, 15 years, the fad back then was a three-bedroom, one bath. So there's a lot of houses that were built some, you know, 15, 20 odd years ago that are all three-bedroom, one bath. And these days, everybody wants an ensuite. So pick a main bedroom. And one thing that I like to do is actually have a look at the window. Where's the window placed? And can you, depending on how it's positioned on the block and how close to the boundary line, can you put in a cantilevered? Now, let me just explain what cantilevering is. Basically, you know, a very small extension, normally out about 1,200 mil, so 1 meter and 20 centimeters. Cantilevered out of the foundations, or actually putting in stumps if you want to, and you know, flooring that, roofing it. It can be just a, it doesn't have to be a full reconstruction of the roof. It can come out under the guttering, even in some instances, depending on the height of the ceiling or above. And putting in a bathroom, you know, shower at one end, toilet at the other, vanity in the middle, and a roll. What do you call those roller doors? No, the ones that slide, sliding door. Sliding door in the middle so it doesn't take up a whole lot of room space, and bingo, you've now got yourself an ensuite. That in itself changes the dynamics. Now, it might go from being a top-of-the-line three-bedroom, one-bath property to a bottom-to-middle-of-the-line three-bedroom, one-and-a-half baths. But that in itself, whilst it might cost you, say, 10 grand, will probably add somewhere between 50 to 60 grand to the value of the property, because you're actually physically adding structure. You're adding something new that it didn't have before. Whereas, you know, painting the thing, it may not add that much. Well, it wouldn't add that much, but could cost you the same amount of money depending on how it's done. Whereas a good old clean of the paintwork, and put the money into something like that that adds something extra to the property, adds a lot more value. And we're talking about value for money and, you know, bang for your buck, basically. Then you've got to think about these things a little bit more strategically than, oh, I really want a painted house or whatever, you know, something that doesn't add as much value to your property.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, even better than the is converting your three-bed, one-bath into a four-bed, two-bath, because you've got the ability to that dining room to disappear or a garage to be incorporated as
or
part
hallways.
Of it.
Or hallways. I hate hallways. Who puts hallways in these days?
No one. No. But actually, in saying that, though, some of the older places with a central hallway would always have a bed, two bedrooms on the front and then maybe a third bedroom, but a then you'd walk through the lounge to get to the back of the house. And, you know, to convert that to a bedroom is so, it's easy. It's so really, really easy. And it's going to add value.
And the other thing is that you can do very easily, which I know is one of your pet loves, if you like, is making the outside inside. These days, the trend is definitely one of outdoor living, outdoor entertaining, bringing that you know, that atmosphere of the outside, particularly if you've got a nice little garden, landscape garden outside, bringing it as part of the inside of the house. So opening up probably the back of the house, that's where you actually do your living and your entertaining and your dining and all of that sort of stuff. So superfluous extra rooms like a study nook perhaps could be a bedroom, or the dining room specifically can be a bedroom. And sectioning off parts of the lounge room can actually turn into a bedroom as well by extending onto things, so that because you've got more room of this indoor-outdoor thing.
Yeah, generally in the past the Australian homes were built in a way where the living area was sort of in the middle of the house. And so if you can change that around a little bit without spending too much money and creating an area at the rear of the house, where you put a bifold door in, and I think if you don't put a bifold door into a renovation, there's something wrong with you.
That's so, pretty harsh.
Yeah, well, you know, and the idea is that you can open up the doors, and it's just a complete, you're just walking from inside to out, and there's actually no division anymore. It doesn't matter if there's a barbecue or party or you're watching the football or whatever, outside is in and inside is out. And it's really important to be able to sell that. Now, not so important with the valuer. The valuer will still see a nice door there, but create the atmosphere, because when the valuer does come in and you open up that door and he can see, he may not see the bifold door, but he sees the ability of someone to live comfortably, he gets a good warm, or he or she gets a good warm feeling about the place and will actually value it better.
Place looks bigger.
Yeah, absolutely. And because some places, even if you have full glass across the back, it's not the same as being able to open up all those doors and see out into the air. And for some reason, it just closes you in, even if it is glass.
Mm. And, of course, me thinking up here in Queensland, you've got to have fly screens.
Yeah, and they do make fly screens that will suit them. And obviously, come dusk, then you pull these fly screens closed and you buy citronella. And so get over it.
Oh, there's a lot of those things that you can put up now that are, they push across like curtains almost. So lighting is another thing that I find very, very important. And a lot of the older houses particularly were very poorly lit. People like to have that cozy kind of feel, which to a limited extent is okay. But to the broader perspective, most people like it light and airy and spacious these days.
Yeah, so skylights are a really simple way to be able to get more light into different areas, especially down those long hallways. So they're reasonably cheap sky tubes. You just put a little hole in the roof, and then you put a transparent cover over it, and it reflects all the light straight down the reflective tube into there. And then you've also got some cheap lighting. Now, downlights nowadays, I do like downlights. I like them to be flush with the ceiling. You can do feature lights with that, but it's really not that important. And an electrician can quite easily install some downlights. You put four downlights in every room, just in from the corners, so it actually lightens up the rooms a lot. And make sure that if you're either getting a valuer in or you're selling, that you do have the lights on when they're coming in.
Tell me, what's your thoughts on the difference between LED lighting and the normal halogens?
I could be a bit controversial here. LED lighting is quite good, and it uses a lot less power. 12-volt lighting can sometimes use more power than 240-volt lighting, depending on the transformers and how cheap the bulbs that you buy are with them. But LED lighting will put out quite a natural light, and is generally a better way to go, and the bulbs do last longer.
I'm actually swaying more towards the LED lighting these days than the other sorts. Anyway, that's just by and by. So lighting's important. Adding bedrooms is important. Adding an ensuite if you can, particularly if the place hasn't got an ensuite. That counts from the valuer's perspective. What else do you find that the valuer takes into account that really makes a big difference to your bottom line, either revalue, really, is I guess what we're talking about here?
Yeah, in the bathrooms, I think that some of the really simple things you can do to make sure the valuer is happy is to make sure that there's no mould anywhere or anything, any stains around the ceilings. Give those a quick paint. If the grout is old and not looking that great, that's something you can do yourself, although I'm not a fan of do-it-yourself. One of the things you can do is just scrape the grout out and re-grout it. It's quite a simple job. Change your tapware. You know, as a plumber, whenever I do a renovation, I try to do as least plumbing as I possibly can of moving, toilets and vanities around. If the plumbing's in the wall and the pipes are in the floor, try not to move them. Just get new tapware, and that's cheap again. Some of the major hardware stores can give you some really good deals on tapware that are just nice, simple chrome finishes. And the bathrooms will add just over as a cosmetic renovation, make it look quite acceptable and increase value.
Something you said there about not changing the position of things because that's where the plumbing is, and even for you as a plumber who can, move pipes around wherever you need to put them, you don't even consider moving the positioning of things unless you absolutely have to, unless they're really, really bad. And I mean, I'm the same. I don't like to see any of the, you know, the wet areas changed around dramatically, because my goodness, that adds a lot of money to your renovation and your extension or whatever it is you're doing. You try and keep the water in the same place that it is. So if the sink's there, that's where the sink goes in your new kitchen, or in your, you know, if that's where the toilet is, you leave the toilet there, work around it.
Yeah, I mean, simply replacing it is actually a lot, is probably 20% of the cost of trying to move it and putting a new one in. So if you're just going to take out a toilet and take out a basin and replace it with new vanity, new toilet, then it's a lot easier. Look, just working off the top of my head, if I was going to do new plumbing, if I had to move plumbing around in a bathroom, which is basically doing it new, you would have to spend, just in materials alone, probably $750 in pipework and bits and pieces, and then on top of that you've got the plumber's labour. Well, plumbers are
expensive.
Yeah, and it's got nothing to do with the actual pipework. It's to do with the other jobs they do that no one else wants to do.
They get paid to do the dirty jobs.
Yes, and get paid the other way as well.
Okay, so leave your pipework wherever you can. Leave your wet areas in the same position. Even, we talked about toilets before. Great thing to be talking about to everybody, but anyway, changing a toilet seat can actually make it look like a new toilet.
Yeah, and no one's really going to lift the toilet seat to look under it. You may as well make the top look quite pretty. And you can buy systems that will, you know, you can buy a system that will link to the toilet seat so you can't see the pipe at the back of it, all of that. And they're, again, really simple to put in. The bathroom is a simple way to add value without having to spend too much.
Yeah. While we're on, you know, those types of things where we're talking about bathrooms, the next one obviously is kitchens. And I know for a fact that you are the master of second-hand kitchens.
Yeah.
previously loved kitchens. What's your secrets there?
Well, I mean, we've only ever, for any renovation, we've done a fair few renovations. For any renovation we've ever done, we've only ever bought one brand-new kitchen. And it was a flat pack, so even in that kitchen probably looked about a $30,000 or $40,000 kitchen, only cost us $10,000. But the secret is to look for second-hand kitchens, and to me it's just a jigsaw puzzle. If you know the space that it's going to fit in, and you find a kitchen on either eBay or Gumtree or wherever you want to go looking for it, it's just a matter of making the puzzle work. Now, occasionally you've got to make a spare cupboard, or you buy a big enough kitchen so that you've got bits and pieces that your carpenter can cut and dock off and make it work. And then it's all simple. If you've got an older kitchen that you have and you don't want to go to the cost of replacing it, you might look at a new benchtop. Again, some of the major hardware outlets have benchtops that you can buy off the shelf. You may look at either re-laminating your cupboards, or you might paint the actual doorway so that you paint it. And really just go simple. A black top and a white door is going to be a classic look that won't go out of fashion. And then the best thing to do after that to make the kitchen look approachable is actually put a new splashback in. Again, you can buy a tile for 55 cents and you probably only need, you know, 40 or 50 tiles to make a decent splashback, and grout it again, just white and simple. Keep it classic and don't go overboard with colours.
Yeah. What I find with renovations is that the things that add the biggest bang for your buck are the biggest surface areas. So, you know, I was talking about painting before, and I said, you know, if it was the cost of $10,000 to paint a place, or $10,000 to, you know, turn an unused area into another bedroom, well, the bedroom will give you more revaluation, because it just puts you in another class. But painting a place, or touching up, or, you know, giving something a jolly good scrub is often actually what's required. The large surface areas give a bigger total effect for less money. So surface areas, we're talking about obviously walls and ceilings for painting, and that's relatively cheap, and it is something I suppose you can do yourself if you're really pushing it. Just talk about colours a little bit there. You've got some formulas on hues of colours, tints.
Yeah, look, when it comes to colours, if you you can bring an interior designer into it if you want to, but that's going to cost you money. And so we're talking about trying to save as much as possible. So if you are unsure about what colours you want to paint, the simplest way to go is to find something that's neutral. So obviously in the cream range is usually a neutral colour.
Creamy white,
something like that. And in that, so once you've picked a colour, rather than trying to find colours that match with that, just go to your paint store that you're going to buy from and tell them, look, I want my grand piano colour.
As an example,
grand piano. I want to do the walls in normal grand piano. I'd like to do the trim in 200%. So what they'll do is they'll make the grand piano a stronger tint of the same colour. And then you might say, look, can I do the ceiling? Or can you make it a 0.25%, so 25% for the ceiling? So every one of those colours is still grand piano. They're just in different tones of that same colour, and it will work quite simply.
If any of you have done any sort of training in colour or, you know, an artist's degree or a, you know, TAFE course on interior designing or any of that kind of stuff, you know, this is what comes through. The different hues of the same colour, you're not going to have them clashing because they're the same colour, just in different strengths, and that's always a safe bet. So walls, we're talking about that, ceilings, that sort of thing, and of course flooring is the next one. And again, there are some very simple things that you can do that give a massive effect for relatively little money.
Yeah, that's right. And just going back to walls,
yeah,
never put a feature wall in. It's not the fashion at the moment. It'll turn things off. And don't put wallpaper in either.
Oh, my God, that's my pet hate. Yours is feature walls and mine's wallpaper.
Ah. I grew up in a house of wallpaper with that was velvet on the walls. Sometimes I used to put a Velcro suit on just to get a stick. So flooring is really simple. Look, if you've got timber floorboards underneath, you get some prices, get four or five different prices from different flooring guys to get your flooring sanded and polished. There's different finishes you can put on there and they'll explain to you what the differences are. But, you know, I've had some jobs where the price range has gone from $2,000 to $5,500 to do exactly the same job. So do get your quotes. That's an important part of renovation. Make sure you get 4 to 5 quotes a minimum, especially when you're first starting out. And so flooring's pretty fantastic.
And, of course, the other thing you can do is once you've got the nice polished floors, put some rugs down.
Yeah.
Makes it cosy.
Yeah, it creates warmth.
All right, what if you haven't got floorboards underneath? What do you do then?
Well, your choices are you either go for a tile, and nowadays with the glues that we've got, we can glue straight on top of some chipboard or concrete quite easily. So I like gloss myself. I like glossy finishes because that creates shine. It's not great for wearing, but you can tile. Usually try and get a neutral tile. If you can afford and it works out, the numbers work out, get a vitrified floor tile. So it's a clay tile that is actually completely clay, completely stone all the way through it. And they gloss up really nicely. The bigger the tile you can get, the better. It adds more perspective to the room. Your other choices are some pretty hard-wearing carpet. Usually I prefer to go into the bedrooms only with carpet if you are going to use carpet. And then your last choice, one of the choices you've also got is a floating floor. I personally am not a fan of floating floors to live in because they creak and groan around the place. But as a quick fix to get a value done or to get a renovation, they're reasonably cheap per square metre. They install very easily, and that means that it's less labour and it looks quite good.
So just a little tip here, if any of you have got properties in far north, whether it be Northern Queensland, Northern Territory or WA, the water and the, you know, the monsoon season and things like that do not fare very well with carpets. And honestly, in a rental property, particularly if you're looking at a rental property now as opposed to your own home, but in a rental property, it's just not even worth putting carpets in the bedrooms because inside 2 years, they smell. They don't just smell, they stink just because of the moisture in the air. It doesn't mean that they've been leaking or anything else, just the moisture in the air that's dreadful. So try and veer away from carpets the hotter it is. And, you know, for rental properties particularly, there's some really good hard-wearing linos now, which are a lot more preferable than the, you know, than the carpet option if you can't afford the tiles. So window dressings. Now, window dressings are something that, you know, everyone's got their own tastes and things, but it does add a finished look to a place if you've just renovated it, particularly when you're, you know, looking to get those valuers in to get a nice high valuation to suck some equity out to go and buy more properties.
Yeah, that's right. The plantation shutters are really the Rolls Royce of what we're looking at when it comes to window dressing, and if you can afford them, but they are very expensive.
Probably not for a quickie just to get the value up, though. I mean, no, they're lovely, right. But oh my God, they're expensive.
Yeah, and you can usually go down to your standard window dressing or in spotlight type scenario, and they will have standard timber Venetians in stock at standard lengths, and your carpenter or handyman will be able to cut them down to suit the size window that you've got. Try and go for a really simplistic white. I'm not a fan of timber colours myself. There are people that like them, but I just don't think that timber is something that creates value, and that's my personal opinion. So I try and go for a white, wide-blade timber Venetian so that it looks half-decent. If that's still too expensive, then you can go for a standard roller blind, a Holland-type blind, that, again, you can buy down the same store and get it cut down to size.
A lot of the plastic lookalikes these days, you can hardly tell the difference.
No.
Particularly the thick ones.
That's right. And if it's going to, it comes down to the dollar. If it's worthy of saving the dollar and it still doesn't affect the end product, then don't spend the money and buy the cheaper one.
Yeah. And that's what it's about with the renovation. I mean, if you're doing it for a specific purpose to suck out another 10, 20, 50, 100, 200 grand, it all comes down to, you know, what are you going to do with it else? What else are you going to do with that money? And how can you make that money work? And how much money can you earn out of that money somewhere else, as opposed to having a, you know, a timber blind versus a plastic one, I suppose, really. Yeah. All right. What about externally to the house? You know, landscaping, external claddings, things like that, finishes. How much importance do you place on that? I mean, street appeal is something that I find very, very important, because particularly if you're selling a place, I mean, people will drive past and say, oh, I'm not going in there. No matter how good it is inside, if it doesn't have street appeal, you'll never get them inside. Value is perhaps a little different, although they do take it into account.
Yeah, and a valuer will still pull up to a street and make their first impression by looking at the house. So you may as well make the first impression a good one. So some of the things you can do to the external walls of the house is that you can, if you've got a brick house, you can render it. The cheapest thing to do is only render the front of the house and then just paint down the side. If you can afford it, go all the way around. You can...
Bit of a cheat there, just painting the front of the house?
Well, whoever walks down the side of the house and say they've missed out here.
Can I tell you a story? Years and years and years ago, I had a student that I was helping out in, and she had a place in Port Hedland. Now, Port Hedland, for those of you who don't know where it is in a mining town in northern Western Australia. And she was telling me about how she'd done this fabulous renovation and she'd done it all herself and, you know, she'd scrubbed so that her fingernails were all bare and all of this sort of thing she was carrying on about, and how she'd painted it and how wonderful it looked and all of this sort of thing. And she sent me pictures and I'm going, okay, well, it's all right. I wouldn't go overboard about it, but anyway, she liked it. It wasn't the colours I would have picked, but anyway. And I was going to Port Hedland, so I, you know, I'd arranged to come and have a look at this fabulous renovation that she had done. And pulling up in front of the house, I could see that, yes, she had actually painted. And I said, not the colours I would have picked, but anyway. She, walking up to the house, I noticed that only the front of the house was actually painted. And inquiring on why the rest of the house wasn't painted, she goes, nobody paints the whole house. You only ever paint the front of the house.
Makes perfect sense. She was looking at the dollar.
I was horrified.
You're the one that taught her. She saved.
But the thing is, her statement after that was, because Port Hedland is a place where they ship out iron ore, and there's an iron ore washing and processing plant there at Port Hedland, and it it gives off a lot of dust. So her next comment to me was, no matter what colour you paint the house, it's going to be pink in 2 years anyway, which is true.
Yes, that's right.
Every house in Port Hedland is pink because of this pink dust. So I guess there was some validity in all that process.
Yes, and so when it comes to other finishes on the house, sometimes you've got cladding. There's been a few houses we've bought now where they've had the plastic or aluminium cladding on the outside of the house. We've actually pulled that off and found the old timber cladding underneath and restored that and brought it back. You can also, nowadays, we call it, well, the standard name is blue board, so you can screw blue board over your existing cladding and have that rendered so that it looks like a rendered finished house even though it's a timber house. You know, a roof is important as well. So if you've got an old drabby roof, a metal roof can be painted to make it, you can roll it, well, making sure that you keep the right safety standards, you can have it painted yourself, or you can get professionals that will spray it and give it a much better appearance. And again, it's reasonably cheap to do that. And
the same with tiles.
Yeah, and the same thing. You can now paint tiles over the top. So, you know, they get up there with all the safety equipment. They gurney it down and high-pressure gurney and make sure that it's clean and then paint over the top of that as well.
Before you go on there, just cleaning a tiled roof makes a massive, massive difference. I mean, it all gets built up with a bit of mold and dirt and car grease and everything else that drives past. And just cleaning a roof, sometimes it doesn't even need, particularly tiles, doesn't even need painting. It just needs cleaning.
Yeah, and especially nowadays it's even easier because there's commercial cleaners that you can, that are in a bottle that you spray up on the roof and you don't even have to wash it down. The actual rain will do it for you and clean it off for you.
Really? I didn't know that. There you go. What about asbestos roofs? What do you do about them?
Look, asbestos is one of those things that is a dangerous product. It's interesting that two people could stand side by side, inhale the same amount of asbestos, and one will be affected by it and the other person won't be. So you've got to be very, very careful with asbestos. Use the correct people to remove it, but you don't necessarily have to remove it. You can put products over the top of it. So to me, once the danger of asbestos is when you break it. So if you are concealing it by putting products over the top like a blue board or laminate, then, you know, you're not doing any danger or harm to anything.
There's certain things you can paint on it too, which, you know, seals it a little bit more.
Yeah, and again, it really comes down to the breaking of the fibres themselves. So once you snap or break or screw or do something like that, that means that the ability for the fibres to get airborne and someone to be able to inhale them. I mean, the same can be said about lead-based painting. In the past, most paints pre-1976, I think it was, were lead-based. So no good for kids licking walls and whatever. So go down the hardware store, get a lead test kit, rub it up against the wall and you will see quite quickly that it is lead-based. If it is lead-based, definitely don't go scraping it or doing anything. Make sure you get a professional painter in to deal with it.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that beginner renovators get very caught up in is trying to do everything themselves. They think they're actually saving money by doing so. And, you know, if they're half-skilled, they might be. However, they've really got to look at their cost of time and their opportunity cost of, you know, tiling the bathroom versus being a air traffic controller or something. You know, how much time are they going to take up being trying to do tiling which they're unskilled at and probably won't do a very good job versus, you know, do a couple of hours overtime and pay a tiler to make it happen. And a lot of people, particularly when they first start out, think they have to do everything themselves. And I mean, look, I have to confess that in the early days, I was one of those. And you know, you might spend an extra 6 months doing a job. Well, that's 6 months worth of holding costs, 6 months worth of interest that you're paying. It's 6 months worth of not being able to extract your equity to get out and do something because you've spent 6 months trying to do it yourself as opposed to just get in there, get somebody to make it happen and, you know, get the money out, make it happen, go off and do a deal somewhere else. You have very fixed ideas about where cost savings can come from, and skimping on trades is not one of them.
No, I don't think, I mean, I agree completely with do-it-yourselfing. I don't think it's worthy of it. Now, on a job site, I can do the majority of things that have to be done on the job site, but I choose not to do them because it's not efficient for me. And at the end, the product that I put out is far inferior to those people that do it day in and day out. And so not only are you going to lose out on your 6 months of time, you're going to have an inferior product that is either not going to sell as well. So you might save yourself $1,000 or $2,000 on labour, which isn't a lot of money, but it might cost you $4,000, $5,000, $10,000 on a quality finish because a buyer can see that it hasn't been done by a professional. So look, when it comes to saving, you can try and save on your labour costs on a job site, on a renovation, but your majority of your savings is going to be where you purchase materials and how you use those materials efficiently. Mm. I am a massive fan of eBay. They have a very good policy. They ensure that fraudulent behaviour doesn't happen. They are supportive of both buyer and seller whenever there's a dispute. You can buy products there. You know, some of the savings that I've made, up to 90% plus savings in purchasing items that are relatively new, still look new, but, you know, you, rather than paying a brand new retail price, you can get it off someone who's ready to get rid of it for far, far less.
Mm. Yeah, and you've got a lot of techniques and strategies to teach some people on that score as well. So perhaps we'll do that for another time. But the other thing that I think is very important is the warranty side of the work that's done. I mean, you know, there's certain things that you absolutely never, ever, ever want to touch when it comes to, you know, trade-based work. And in a lot of cases, you're actually risking your insurance and, you're threatening lawsuit by trying to do something that you're not skilled at.
Yeah, that's correct. And It's so important that everyone listening understands that there's two things that you absolutely do not play with on any job site, and one of them is electricity and the second one is gas. They're two things that will kill people. Not only will you be up for a lawsuit, but you're quite likely to be charged with legal crimes for sometimes manslaughter comes up in some of these cases for poor workmanship, for people that don't know what they're doing. So I would say that when it comes to electricity and it comes to any type of plumbing that involves gas, I would stay well away from it and make sure the professionals do it, because it's just too dangerous. Too many houses have been blown up and too many people have been electrocuted over faulty workmanship.
That's right. Now, I mean, we could go on and on here for all afternoon, Ian, really, but there's a lot more to learn and there's a lot more theory and strategy behind the process of a renovation. And, you know, if you're renovating just because you want to live there and that's what it is and you have no interest in making money, then, you know, do what you like, do what your heart desires. But if you're doing it as a strategic move to add value to your property, which can be then used to invest and create passive income and replace your income and all of those sort of things, then it's, you know, you've got to be strategic about your approach. Similarly, if you're doing it for sale, well, there's a whole other set of circumstances that need to be taken into account when you know, what sells, what's the dynamics, and there's a whole due diligence thing we could go on and talk about for days on that score. But if you're going to take this seriously, then you need to step up to the market. You need to take on some education behind you to make those sort of things happen. Now, you and I are actually going to be doing a little seminar very shortly together on exactly this and the process of creating chunks of money. You know, how to create chunks of money so that you can use that money to get out there and replace income and, live the life that you want to go and live. So if any of you are interested in what we've got coming up, please go to the ilovereallestate.tv website, and we've got all sorts of stuff that will be popping up there about all sorts of events coming up, and one of them will be a super fast profits event, which Ian and I are going to do together. That'll be fun.
Yeah, I really, really look forward to those events. It's good. It puts me right in the position where I can actually go back to my teaching days, where I can get the information that's in my head and give it out, and, you know, and people can use it. It gives me a buzz to see that.
Yeah, the thing that really gives me a buzz is, yes, I love the teaching side of it, but the thing that really gives me a buzz is 6 months down the track, 12 months down the track, you know, the students come back and go, wow, you know, I did this and that happened, and you know, then I was able to go on and make this happen, and, you know, I've been able to quit my job, and all of these fabulous, fabulous stories, and that's what's really rewarding.
Yeah, and some of your students in the last year that I've been working with have done some absolutely fantastic stuff.
Fabulous.
And it actually, to sit back and see that, it's really quite uplifting to see that they can go out and actually do what they've learnt, and the education is so important for them to be able to move forward.
Yeah. And even, you know, you talk about income replacement. I know some of the students that you've been actually working with, they've gone on and replaced not just their income, but two and three times over their income.
I mean, there's quite a few examples, and, you know, there's some that are well in excess of me now. Good on them, I reckon. So, you know, and it's fantastic to see. And they all set goals, and they're achieving those goals, which is great.
Yep, it is great. Well, Ian, thank you so much for coming on and sharing some of the insights on this particular strategy, being renovation. And I'm sure we'll be back again together very, very soon to talk about another exciting topic, because there's lots of stuff we can really help people with.
Thank you. Really looking forward to that.
Okay. Well, thank you, guys. That's it for today. But jump on that website, iloverealestate.tv, and get on iTunes. Get on iTunes and make yourself a regular downloader of the podcasts, and you know, really start to put some stuff into place and get that education behind you. So, thanks, guys. I'll be back again to talk to you very, very soon on something completely different. Bye for now.